Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. I was going to talk about some space topics tonight, but we have a special guest, and usually I don't have guests on my show, but this was something that came up. I've been talked about this on the show previously. Earth Day 2016 is coming up, and it is April 22nd, so right around the corner. And a group of students at a high school decided to do a project relative to Earth Day. And I've been sending emails back and forth. But tonight I have as a guest the teacher who teaches organic gardening at a high school. Her name is Mandy. And I want to welcome you, Mandy. Say hello.
Hi.
And what we've done here is the students have been preparing for Earth Day to have demonstrations, and people are going to come and look at their like booth setups, and they're going to talk about, in this case, Mandy. Now they were going to talk about sustainable living and show things that you could make yourself that normally you would buy in, say, the store. Is that correct?
That's right, right. Clothing, dishes, medicine, paper goods, all kinds of things that you would normally be purchasing that come from a distance and are manufactured in a factory. We're taking a look at what we could substitute that would be locally made or made from products from the farm, from a garden.
So the idea is that you have an organic, say a hobby farm type of size, maybe 5 acres. Is that the idea? And then you could look around and what natural resources do you have where you could make products that you would normally buy at the store?
Exactly.
And so in one of the projects they were looking at is talking about the McCanny wing generator, which I'm very proud that they took the time to take a look at this. And so we'll be talking about that. And as a result of the class, the students have written up a list of questions. And so I'm going to attempt to answer those on the air. And we can also discuss the more general project of organic farming and products that you could make yourself that you would typically buy at the store. So, Mandy, why don't we start out with the student questions related to the wing generator? So go ahead, start with your questions. And remember, these are coming from high school students. This is for their Earth Day project coming up April 22nd, and Mandy is their teacher.
Okay. Well, the class took a look at the presentation of the wing generator, the animated presentation. And they had lots of comments and questions about why, in general, why did you choose wind of all the renewable energy resources? Why did you choose wind over, say, solar or hydropower?
Well, okay, let's take hydro first. Hydro is where you have a dam and you have a big reservoir of water, and the water falls through a channel and then drives generators. That is a wonderful free source of energy, and Canada produces a tremendous amount of hydropower because they have a lot of water, they have a lot of rivers, and they sell a lot of that power to the United States, especially the northern states. However, not everybody in the world has abundant water like Canada does. And the rainfall in many parts, even though they may have rivers, the rainfall is not sufficient to support electricity. My goal when I started to design the wing generator was to have a worldwide solution. And the wind blows every place on the planet, sometimes more in some places more than others. Now, why did I not choose solar? Well, solar has a little problem in that the sun only shines about an average of 4 hours a day. Now you say, well, it could be 8 or 10 hours of sun, but but in the early morning and in the afternoon, you don't have much sun, and so you don't get that much sun power. So the literally the factor that you multiply is 4 hours a day. That's for solar power. And now look at the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere. In the United States, the majority of the population lives in a very cold region most of the year, and they don't have that much sun. So solar is not that good because it's not universal. The wind blows at the North Pole, at the South Pole. Say it's stormy. Solar doesn't work. Wind works when the storm and the wind is blowing. It works better. So, and at night, you get absolutely nothing from solar. So imagine you're living in a northern state, even the southern states of the United States. And at night, the wind is blowing. You could be running your air conditioner if it's hot. You could be running your heater. You could heat your house with electric from the wind. But anyway, wind is the most universally available energy source.
Okay. Well, there are fluctuations in the velocity of the wind, obviously. Now, how would your generator manage to level out those fluctuations and to be able to use the generator in high velocity conditions and then in very low velocity conditions?
Well, that's one of the beauties of the wing generator design. The typical wind generator that you see in the field has three blades. And when the wind is very weak, up to about 15 miles an hour, the wind just blows right through them and they don't work at all. If the wind is too strong, then they have to shut them down because they have a lot of vibrational problems, etc. So the current three-blade wind generator does not work well. And we could go through later some of the comparisons. But the fluctuation in the wind is a very real issue. But here is how you manage that. Currently, the voltage is controlled by the central power company. When I designed the wing generator, my plan was to build them big enough, scale them up to large sizes, so that they would replace nuclear and coal-fired power plants, electrical power plants. And so then what happens is as you build the wing generators all around the country and the coastline and wherever there's abundant wind, you put that energy onto the current grid system and you control the voltage at your house or up the street at a local exchange box, electrical box. And so the voltage now is controlled at the house. So you'd no longer have to control the voltage out there where the generators are. You just have to dump that energy onto the grid, and then that energy is converted into the proper voltage right at your house. So that's how you control the variable wind issue.
Mm-hmm. Another question they had was, what's the criterion for selecting a good site? Say, on your 2-acre homestead, how would you go about deciding where to locate a small wing generator? And then on the larger scale, what would be the regions, what would you look for in terms of criterion for locating the larger wing generator to produce enough energy for a town or a manufacturing plant or something like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. Now, let's take the 5-acre farm first. Many people have a hillside. The thing that a lot of people have on a small farm is trees. Well, trees upset the airflow. So you have to get on the side of the trees where the prevailing wind comes from. And typically in the United States, the wind comes from the west or the southwest. And so you would have to get on that side of the trees, but with wind, you cannot have obstructions. That's why you see some wind generators, they're up on a very tall pole. And so if you had a situation where you had blockage of wind, you'd probably get together with some neighbors and find a location, and you'd put in a larger one that would function for all of the various farms in a, say, maybe a 10 acre or 20 acre or 50 acre region, and supply the energy so you'd find a hilltop or someplace where there's a good wind, access to wind. Now, for a small town, there again, you have to find a location where you have consistent wind. And let's take an example of pumping water into a tank. A tank is a holding tank like a battery, or with electricity, a battery or a capacitor. And a big tank could supply a lot of houses. And then the inflow into that tank has to be equivalent to the outflow. And so that's the same way with electricity. You have a battery storage or capacitor storage or compressed air storage. There's many ways to store energy. In fact, hydrogen and methane, you can create those through electrolysis. It's an electrical process. And then store those in a compressed air tank. On the national level, we know there are wind maps. You can look them up on the internet. We know where the wind blows the strongest, mostly offshore. So there's places in Texas, Minnesota, the east. There are windy places all over the country. So we know where these places are. They're well known up in the Colorado Mountains, the Rocky Mountains, etc. We know where these places are. So that's where you install your wind generators, and then you distribute it with high voltage, just like you do today with nuclear or coal power plants. You distribute the energy with high voltage around the country. So it might be very windy in San Diego or San Francisco, or it might not be windy there one day, but it might be windy up off New York. And so the idea is you are dumping the energy into the power grid, and it flows throughout the power grid. And so that's the design. It's called distributed energy design. And the idea, as I explained before, you put the power onto the grid with the wind generators, and then the voltage is controlled at the house.
Mm-hmm. We were all intrigued by the possibility of a wind generator being offshore. Actually floating at sea. What would that material be that could float and hold such a huge contraption?
Well,
would it be floating like a floating bridge?
Well, imagine a pontoon boat with a deck on it, and literally that's what you would have. You'd have a big pontoon boat and then an anchor rope coming off the front of it. So it's if you imagine a boat, like a sailboat or any kind of boat, on an anchor, it always points into the wind, because the wind will always keep it, the anchor rope and the boat, so that it's always pointing into the wind. And that's what happens when you have a big wing generator out in the ocean. You anchor it, and you have a line that comes in carrying the electricity. There right now are many offshore wind installations with the three-blade wind generator. But see, the problem is they can only make those up to a certain size. And they're not big enough to replace nuclear and coal power plants. The wing generator you can make big enough so you can start replacing nuclear and coal power plants. But offshore is a great place for these to be, because they're out of the way. They would be on an anchor, and they would always point into the wind. So that would be one of the main locations to place the wing generators. Or even if you had like a small town and a lake nearby, you could have a wing mm-hmm. generator out in the middle of a reservoir or a lake. That's another great possibility for locating a wing generator.
Yes, excellent. All right. Well, something you just said triggered a question that someone had about what does it mean that your wing generator the design is scalable.
Scalable means, let's look at another technology. Let's look at an airplane or a sailboat. There are two devices, inventions, that have wings. And the sailboat has sails, but they're like wings. They are scalable. Now, let's look at, let's say, sailboat design. If you make a sailboat twice as long, you don't have to make it twice as wide, and you can make the sail design much, much bigger. Because the volume, this is the key, this is one of the, you have to understand about design, the volume of the hull of the boat goes up in three dimensions. And so a longer boat will support a much bigger sail plan. If you have a little short boat, it's very tippy in the wind. A great big sailboat, you see some of these old clipper ships on the ocean, and they have vast amounts of sail, and you think, how could this sailboat hold all that sail? And that's the principle. So with the wing generator, the same holds true for airplanes. But with the wing generator, it's growing in three dimensions. It's growing in a bigger circle, but it's also growing in the depth of the third dimension. And that's something that the three-blade wind generator, for example, does not do. So when I say scalable, you're looking, let's take an example. Say you double a three-blade wind generator design. You double the diameter of the blades. You're going to get four times the amount of wind collecting area, but they don't spin as fast, so it's really, you're losing quite a bit of capture of energy. With the wing generator, you're getting eight times the collection area. Now let's multiply by 10. If you take a three-blade wind generator and let's multiply its dimension by 10. With the three-blade wind generator, you're getting 100 times the collection area. With the wing generator, you're getting 1,000 times the collection area. Do you see what scalable means?
Yes.
And so the wing generator grows in three dimensions. And that's why when you get to the really big ones, they are tremendously powerful. That's why, because it scales in three dimensions. So the other thing about scalability is that the wing generator turns very slowly. You can't make big things spin fast. They'll fly apart. So inherent in the design is the fact that the wing generator turns slowly. And it's like a sailboat or the sails, as you make a sailboat bigger, you have much more sail, but the wind velocity, the larger sailboat will move faster, and so the outside of the wings are moving actually very fast, even though they're spinning at a slower rate. They're moving probably about 60 to 90 miles an hour at the edge of a 1,000-foot wing generator. And that increases the lift and the force involved. And so there are many, many physics factors here, let's say, involved in scalability. So it's a great question. It's it's something that a physics student would have a lot of fun with, understanding all the variable scalable factors of the wing generator.
Yes, indeed. You may have just answered this, so if so, we'll go on to the next question. But a student did ask, how fast do you think the maximum speed of a large wind generator would be in a high wind situation?
Okay, now that is a good question. And this goes back to an earlier question of how do you deal with high wind situations. Let's look at a sailboat again. If you're out in the ocean and you have a sailboat, what it's called reefing. What you do is you make the sail size smaller, and you get the same amount of force as if you had a light wind with all the sail up. And also you can put the sails into the wind, so you can change the direction that the sails are, the angle of attack, so to speak, with the wind direction. So you can control the force on the wing generator by making some adjustments in the wings themselves. And so by doing that, you can still have it operational at high wind speeds. And just like a sailboat out on the ocean, if you had a sailboat on the ocean, you can't say, well, it's a really windy day. You're already out there. You have to deal with it. And so the same way with the wing generator, what there again with the three-blade wind generator that you see out in the field today, when the wind gets too strong, they shut them down. They tether the blades into the wind, and they literally shut them down because they don't work in a high wind situation. With the wing generator, you can reef in the sails, you can change the angle of attack, and you can still produce all of the energy that you want. And then when the wind is light, you change again, and you can trap a lot more energy from a low wind situation, and the wind is not just blowing through it. You're trapping all that energy because the wings are cover the whole area. That's the whole point.
All right, selection of material. The students were very interested because they heard the comment that this wheel could not be made of metal. In fact, none of the components that are up in the air would be made of metal. So they were wondering what in the world would be light enough and strong enough to support this design.
Well, there again, we have carbon tubing. And you might be familiar with the golf clubs today of carbon. The handles on golf clubs are made of a carbon fiber. They're very lightweight, and they're very flexible, but they can be made to be very strong. As far as the sails, we have tremendous technology in sail material today. Very strong, very lightweight. And so when you're building something like this that's going to produce energy for the next 50 years without maintenance or very minimal maintenance, you can afford to put materials into this because you're not mining nuclear fuel. You're not mining coal. You don't have a train that's delivering that high energy content fuel. You're not building this big facility that's got to burn that fuel. In fact, the cost of installation of a wing generator is probably about a hundredth that of a coal-burning power plant. But it's going to produce energy from the wind for a period of maybe 20 to 30 years, and then you replace the materials. But this is one of the great things about the wing generator is we have so many wonderful modern materials to work with. But let me just say something. There are places that we've researched, and they have a need for the wing generator, for example, Nova Scotia. In the wintertime, the wind blows 80 to 100 miles an hour all the time. The wing generators there will be made of probably aluminum or anodized aluminum, which is not affected by seawater. But the wind is so powerful there that you literally have to make it out of metal to withstand the conditions. That's not typical, but I just wanted to mention that there are places where you, in fact, would use very strong materials.
And would it be necessary to ground the wing generator? Would it need to be grounded, and how would it be grounded?
Oh, that's a great question. It's the same situation as a current day power plant. Literally the ground, when you say ground, you're talking about literally the ground being the common or third pole of your circuit. You have the high wires, the high tension wires that carry the electricity, but it's the same principle. You would ground the electrical circuit right to the ground, right at the facility, and the transmission of electricity, everything is the same. Once you have generated the electricity, everything is the same as current technology with a coal or nuclear power plant. The only difference is you're not burning, creating heat, and then turning that heat into steam and then driving generators with the steam. That's the difference. And we should talk about that because that's a very important issue. But let's go on with the questions.
Okay, we'll come back to that. There were questions about the components.
Mm-hmm.
Would you enumerate just the major components of both the wind catchment aspect of the design and then the actual conversion to electricity? Just a few components of both of the aspects of that, of your design.
Okay, now when you look at the video or the PowerPoint presentation, you see that the wings are an airfoil. Now, say an airplane or a sailboat, they're great examples. An airfoil is originally Leonardo da Vinci, looked at bird wings and realized that the lift aspect of these, there's a principle called the Bernoulli principle, and that means that if you have that curved upper edge and then a design on the lower edge of the wing, you get about a tenfold lift advantage. So the wing generator literally uses a wing in the cross section of the panels that go out and catch the wind. And so that's why I call it a wing generator. It's literally wings that are catching the wind. And so those, that's what derives the power in. Now, the other thing about the wings is when they push, when the force of the air passing over the wings occurs, they push in a radial direction. And so they're creating the force in the radial direction. And that's one of the benefits also of moving very slowly, is that you get the force directed in the radial direction, and that makes it go around. Imagine you have a Ferris wheel, and you have all of the students down on the ground running around the Ferris wheel pushing it. You want to push in the radial direction to make it go around. That's what the problem is with the three-blade wind generator. When it goes very fast, the direction of force is not in the radial direction. So the wing generator is designed to move very slowly. The force on the wings is in the radial direction. Okay, now this is all connected to a hub. Inside the hub, especially on the smaller ones, on the bigger ones, the power generating equipment will be on the ground. But in the smaller ones, the electrical generation equipment is up in the hub. And as the wing spins around, you have a set of magnets and electrical circuits that create the electricity. And then that electricity comes out with the wires. And like I said, at that point, it's the exact same distribution mechanism that you have with nuclear or coal burning electrical power plants.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that reminds me of a question. Someone asked, would they be regular magnets, or would they be some specialized magnet?
Well, there's a problem with magnets. Now, iron magnets and nickel magnets, iron is the more common material to make magnets. Niobium is a material that is a rare earth element, and it comes from China, is the main source. And those are where the rare earth magnets come from, the materials. But it's terribly, terribly polluting. And one of the things I want to do is with the wing generator, I don't want to have pollution as part of the process. So I've decided there's another form of electrical generation. It costs a little bit of electric power, but it's the same technique that is used in your automobile alternator. You don't have magnets, you have two sets of coils. That are wire coils, and they work against each other and create the electricity. And so anyway, that's the technique I want to use for generating electricity with the wing generator. Also, we can use magnets. It depends on economy and the scale, etc. But I want to stay away from rare earth magnets because there's the source is so polluting.
Okay. Anything, any other components you feel would be elementary to know about in getting the basic concept of how the wind is harnessed and how it's converted to electricity and then distributed?
Well, another major component is the base. You have to keep the wing generator facing broadside to the wind. In other words, the wind has to hit the wheel coming in face on. And so it's very important to have a base that's very sensitive to the wind. And so you always keep it facing properly with respect to the wind. But the, so the base, and now there's many designs. The wing generator that you see in the video, there are variations on that. Some of them will actually sit on a pole and rotate at the top of a pole. So there's variations on that. But the base and the mechanism for keeping it into the wind is very important. That's another major component.
All right, let's talk about environmental impact a little bit. I had a student ask, they were very concerned about the conventional three-blade wind generator being a hazard to wildlife, especially birds, flying flocks of birds. How do you know? They wanted to know how you know that the wind generator would not do the same thing.
Great question. The migratory birds, now there are places in California where they put them in a pass and the birds fly over these passes and they don't see the blade coming. So they're looking straight ahead. They see open space and they're flying and the blade comes around and hits them. And they kill a lot of birds. It's a big problem, not only in California, but all over. And so the wing generator, first of all, moves very slowly. It's not moving very fast. And then the other thing is that you can see the blades. If you look at the face of the wing generator, the wings literally fill up the entire space. So you're not going to mistake flying into this because you can see that, you know, there's something in your way. A bird would actually be able to see the entire wing generator. There's no spaces where it thinks it's going to fly through. And so that's one of the big reasons that the wing generator is much better ecologically, is because it's not going to kill birds like the three-blade wind generator.
Mm-hmm. Okay, besides making electricity, the wing generator also can directly pump water from out of the ground and produce compressed air. Both of these would be useful on a homestead or for a family-sized wing generator. Could you kind of speak to that?
Yes, absolutely. This is one of my initial design intentions, was to have it multi-purpose. So on a ranch or a farm, what do you have? You have electricity, you have to pump water, compressed air. Those are things that are standard on almost any small operation. And so you can actually, there's a variety of packages that you can put with the wing generator to do all three, to do one, either of two, or just produce one of them if you wanted. There are situations where, for example, one of the great applications is in desalinization. Reverse osmosis is a process where you pump seawater through a set of filters. They're reverse osmosis filters, but it's very high pressure pumps that are required. And the electricity required to run these pumps is extreme. It's a lot of energy. So if you could use wind energy to directly pump that water, you wouldn't convert to electricity and then run the pumps. You would just directly run the pumps with the wing generator. Now you have something, once you have the initial investment, you can have clean water from the ocean almost without limit. There's maintenance, of course, with anything. But the cost of the energy cost goes away because now you're just deriving that energy from the wind and pumping the water directly. Another great example is in moving large volumes of water. Every spring, for example, the Mississippi River floods, the Missouri River that comes down through the Dakotas floods, and all of that water gets dumped into the Gulf of Mexico, and that's an ecological problem in itself. But what if you could take that water with wind power, with the wing generator, and pump it across to New Mexico or Arizona, where you could green the American Southwest? You would have a water available that normally just runs into the Gulf of Mexico, and green the American Southwest. And you could do that with large wing generators moving the water. So there are many applications. Those are just a few.
Wow, very interesting. That's exciting. All right. Then about compressed air. I have lots of questions about how compressed air is used. And a lot of my students didn't realize that there have been vehicles, public transportation, streetcars, maybe rail cars, that actually used compressed air for fuel.
Correct.
Is that true?
Absolutely. I've got some examples in both the video and the PowerPoint presentation that show there was a train in North Dakota at a mine. And, of course, in a mine, you can't have exhaust or diesel fuel or the chance of a spark. So they had a train made with compressed air, and they ran that all the way up to into the 1960s when they decommissioned it. But and maybe they went to electric or something like that at that point. But the compressed air, and then they used them as streetcars. They had a technique. Now, when you release compressed air, it tends to become very cold, and so it'll freeze up the valve if you let too much out. So they had a propane tank where they would heat up the valve as the air came out, and it would actually expand more. So it was a very effective method of public transportation. So they had streetcars basically built with compressed air power. And so there are actually automobiles in Europe. A lot of the commercial fleets, like UPS and delivery fleets, use compressed air because it's very efficient, it's very low maintenance, the engines are extremely low maintenance, and so it's something that's used, has been used for a long time. But the other thing I should say about compressed air is with the wing generator, there's an electrolysis process where you can split water into hydrogen and oxygen, and you can store the hydrogen, or you can also create methane from the air and pump that into a tank and store it. So those are other ways of storing energy with the wing generator.
All right. And then on a small scale, they were asking... first of all, they were asking, how exactly is the compressed air produced? And then how is it used to run, say, a power tool?
Okay, that's a great question. You may see on construction sites a tank, and it's got an electric or a gas motor, and that's running a wheel that runs a pump. And there are extremely high-pressure pumps that are sold on the commercial market. You can buy these. All you need is rotational motion, and that's what you have with the wing generator. So you just change the rotational motion of the wing generator in place of an electric pump or electric motor or a gas motor or a diesel motor, whatever the case may be. And so you directly compress the air by changing that rotational motion. The wing generator has rotational motion, and the same goes for water pumps. If you look at a water pump, typically you'll have a gas motor, diesel motor, or electric motor on the water pump. So you just replace that with the rotational motion of the wing generator. And then how would you use compressed air? There are all kinds of commercial products that run on compressed air. They use them in auto shops. They use them in manufacturing. If you go to a print shop, for example, a lot of the print equipment uses compressed air. And you'll see things moving, levers moving, and all of this. That's all. A lot of that is compressed air because it's very clean. You're just using air. So there's nothing, there's nothing pollutant about it. So compressed air is used for construction, for power tools, all kinds of uses. There's so many applications for painting, so many applications for compressed air.
Wow. So it'd be kind of like having your own gas pump or something, right, at home.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. All right. I had a few questions about sizing. How do you measure your family's or your personal consumption of electricity? How would you suggest that a student go home and begin to calculate and study the usage of electricity in their home and on their land? And then how would you go about sizing a generator to meet those needs?
That's a super question. Now, there are, let's take an example. Okay, say you have a barn and you have a house and you have lighting. Say you have a refrigerator or a cooler or a freezer in the barn. You have some equipment in the house, and then say you have a work shed where you have tools. Okay, so you calculate the amount of power that you might be using totally at one time. So there's a number of factors. It's called the surge or maximum amount of power. So when you turn on, say, a hand drill, you go, and you turn on that hand drill, or a refrigerator or many appliances, there's a surge current that starts. There's a lot more current and electricity needed to get that started. And then once it's running, it doesn't take quite so much. So you add up all the surge currents and you have to spec out your system so it'll handle that. Or else you would run one tool at a time and then turn that off and run another tool. There's various ways to do it. So basically, and then also with an electrical system, you may have batteries. And so let's imagine that the wind doesn't blow for a day. How many batteries do you need to carry you through a day so the refrigerator runs and the other things run, the computers or whatever else you're using? How much battery backup do you need to carry you through those times when you don't have wind? And you typically try and, say, double that. But, yes, there's a whole process. You examine what you're doing. And then you may say, well, in 3 years, we're going to grow. We're going to build another building here. Well, you may want to build a system that's big enough or that can be adapted in the future to grow or double. Or you may put in another wing generator. Here's a great example. What if you got an electric car? An electric car is going to use a lot of electricity, a lot more than your house uses. And so if you were going to get an electric car, all of a sudden, okay, now you have a bigger power requirement. So that's a great question. And that's the cable sizes, the inverter sizes, the equipment that you buy, all has to be spec'd out before it's very complicated. And there are people that are specialists. But once you learn how to do it, it's relatively simple. But there's a lot of things you have to take into consideration.
Mm-hmm. So that is an opportunity for research in that area. That would be a great project for a student, I think.
Oh, it would be. Yeah, that'd be a great project. And then you could get your electric bill at home. Look at your electric bill and see how much power you use every month. And then what is the biggest appliance in the house? It might be a tool, or it might be the furnace fan or something, you know, that's hard to say. But spec out, and you could do, you know, how many lights do you have on at night, that type of thing. And then by doing that, you can also learn how to economize on energy. Instead of putting in the old incandescent light bulbs, put in the new LED light bulbs. And you bring your energy requirement way down. There are efficient refrigerators. There's all kinds of appliances that are now very efficient, fans, etc. That's a great question. Yeah, it's complicated, but very doable.
Mm-hmm. All right, I forgot a question I meant to ask earlier, but I'll go ahead and pose it now. One of the students asked where your inspiration came from for the wing generator. Did it come from nature? Did it come from building on other technologies?
Okay, this is an interesting question. A long time ago, I would say more than 10 years ago, I was commissioned because I worked in the electronics industry for about 25 years. I'm a physicist. I worked as an electrical engineer. But they commissioned me to do a study, an efficiency study, on the electrical power companies, the nuclear and the coal power plants, and the distribution and the end-to-end efficiency from the time they dug up the uranium out of the ground all the way to when it got to the end user lighting a light bulb in the house, and also for coal. And as an addendum, this was back in the early days when alternative energy was just beginning, they said, why don't you throw in a study on that alternative energy stuff, which at the time was solar and wind primarily. And so, okay, so I did a study, and the first result was that the nuclear and coal power plants were terribly inefficient. When you look at the overall process, you're dealing with about 10% efficiency. In other words, 90% of the energy that's used to create that electricity goes up into the atmosphere in pollution and in heat. And I was astounded. I didn't really think it would be that low. And then looking at the alternative energy, I realized that the way solar and the three-blade wind generators were designed, that I made a calculation, for example, that to cover the world energy needs with the three-blade wind generator, you would have to build 77 million of them. And I thought, my goodness, you know, I never even thought about that. You see them out in the field and you think, oh, that's green energy and aren't we happy? But then I realized that the companies that build the wind generators and the solar panels also have big investment in nuclear power and coal power. And so what I realized was that the alternative energy industry was never, ever going to make a dent in nuclear or coal plants. And so I said, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write out what is called a functional specification. So this is not thinking about design or wings or what it looks like or anything else. This is a specification that says, what does this thing have to do? My major criteria was to design something that could replace nuclear and coal power plants. So it had to be big. And I looked at solar, and I realized solar was not available enough, so it would have to be wind. So I started down the path of wind. Then I realized that once you build them that big, you have to have the heavy equipment on the ground. The wings, you know, the equipment up in the air had to be very lightweight, and it had to be very efficient at low wind speeds and high wind speeds. So this all started to take shape. And the wing generator is the end result. So there was a lot of design work and trial and error in the middle there, but basically that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, this was a question that several students had. And you could predict that there'll be this question in almost every group.
Mm-hmm.
If the wing generator really could provide enough energy for an entire city. If the wind generator could actually replace nuclear power, why isn't it already being used? Why would such a great idea and great opportunity be going to waste or not being used?
Well, I'll take you to Boulder, Colorado. I'll give you two examples here. But let's go to Boulder, Colorado, where they were very interested in putting in alternative energy. They had the money, they had the votes, they had the citizen willpower, and the local power company is suing them and blocking them in changing the regulations to not permit alternative energy to come in and literally replace the power plant. So you can go to Boulder, Colorado. There's groups there. Also in Canada, there's large groups there that are actually fighting the three-blade wind generators because they've realized that the government has made a big investment in them and they don't work. But let me give another example here. This is, I think, a better example. Let's look at a prize that was won by some students. It was to build a human-powered helicopter that could stay in the air, I think it was for 3 minutes. It had to stay in the air for 3 minutes, completely human-powered. This prize went unclaimed for decades. The big helicopter companies like Ball Aerospace or Lockheed or Boeing or Martin, none of those companies could produce a product, a helicopter that would fit the prize and win the prize. Last year, a group of college students from Canada were designed, they were engineering students, they designed a helicopter and won the prize. You can see it on the internet. It's big. It takes up a kind of a stadium, and it's super lightweight. And the guy actually doing the energy part was pedaling a bicycle. They hooked up a bicycle to this four big blades that spun around very slowly, and it was an aerodynamic wonder. But why didn't the big companies do that? Well, first of all, there's not a big return on investment. And second of all, the engineers that go to these big companies go through education processes, and they learn what's at the university level, and there's a very set training pattern that they go through. So when they get out, that's what they're schooled in. And so not many people question. And I think that's the end result. Not many people question what's going on today or how they could improve things or what could they do to make things different. And that's something that I've always done. I've always said, why is this the way it is? How can I change things? How can I make something better? And so the wing generator is something that really nobody had ever imagined before, because the concept in wind generation is that the three-blade wind generator is the most efficient model out there. And what I've shown is that's not the case. So I guess there's quite a few answers, but the one thing I want to tell students is don't believe me. Don't believe me because I have a degree or that I'm up in front of a classroom. I've spent many years of my life in front of a classroom at the university level, teaching physics and mathematics and computer science and astronomy. But the one thing I always tell the students is don't believe me. Go out there and look for yourselves. You know, follow the, as they say, go down the rabbit hole and see what is there. You have to discover this for yourself. So a lot of times the rules, there's all kinds of cases in engineering where people went by a set of rules and they had to do this and this and this. And all of a sudden somebody came along and said, go this direction. And it totally changed what's going on. Let's look at the jet engine compared to propellers. That was a major change, and it took one person to take that design and perfect it. So right now they're dealing with electric airplanes. The Airbus in Europe is a company that builds airliners. They have one guy that's designing their electric airplanes. One guy. And he's been doing it for many years, and they hired him because he has the experience, and they're actually going to start building commercial electric airplanes that'll carry passengers. So I think innovation is something that doesn't happen every day. That might be the answer.
All right. Earlier in our conversation, you made reference to wanting to speak a little bit about comparing the wing generator to the conventional three-blade model. And I'm going to leave it with you to discuss that with your listeners. I've come to the end of the questions that my class had, and we're going to enjoy playing this audio during our Earth Day workshop, where we will have a model of the wing generator and be discussing some of what we have talked about tonight. So thank you so much for having me and for answering our questions. The students will be thrilled, okay?
Well, thanks, Mandy. And it turns out we've got about a minute left of the show. So possibly I'll take the other topics and discuss them on a different show. They're also in the book, the wing generator book. There's a table. I forget what page it's on. I think it's on page 49. And so that's a description of the comparison between the three blade and the wing generator. But I want to thank you, and I want to thank the students for taking interest and putting together the list of questions. This has been a great show. I really appreciate it. And so I just want to remind the audience that my webpage, jmccsci.com. By the way, I extended the sale on the water filter elements. A lot of people didn't know it was there. They said, please leave it up for another day. So I'm going to leave the water filter sale up until midnight on Friday. And so that'll give those other people that didn't know a chance to go there. And all of the main water filter products are on sale. And so that sale will end Friday night. But I appreciate everybody. And I really appreciate, Mandy, all the students that took time and interest to understand about the wing generator. And I wish them all the best in their future endeavors. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.